Uniform Civil Code, know all about UCC in the Constituent Assembly debates. During the Constituent Assembly debates, Muslim leaders proposed amendments to draft Article 35, the present Article 44, which were strongly opposed by other members like K.M. Munshi, Alladi Krishnaswamy Iyer and Dr. B.R. Ambedkar. Here are relevant extracts of the debate. Empowerment of all citizens and gender justice are one of the dominant statement of objects and reasons behind the Uniform Civil Code in India. The desirability of the Uniform Civil Code, UCC, can hardly be doubted. It can concretize only when social climate is built up by the elite of the society and statesmen amongst leaders, who can awaken the masses to accept change. The Narendra Modi government has always demanded that there should be such debate and inclusion of stakeholders and beneficiaries in the decision-making process. The UCC, once enacted, will be more of a secular legislation, non-religious and beneficial. The personal law affects not merely the minorities but also the majority. All persons must trust democratic rule, which will have regards to the religious tenets and beliefs of all people. The laws are fully and consistently enforced to provide adequate protection for the members of religious minorities in India. All communities must be willing to adapt themselves to the changing times. The UCC, if implemented, will override all personal laws with a common set of rules governing every citizen. The concept of UCC is enshrined in Part 4 of the Constitution, which deals with the directive principles of the state policy under Article 44. The language of Article 44 states that the state shall endeavour to secure for the citizens a uniform civil code throughout the territory of India. It is necessary to note that, during the Constituent Assembly debates, the present Article 44 was numbered as draft Article 35. During the course of the Constituent Assembly debates, amendments to draft Article 35 were proposed by Mohammad Ismail Sahib, Nazaruddin Ahmad, Mahbub Ali Beg, Sahib Bahadur and Pokar Sahib Bahadur. Relevant extract of the proposed amendments and their explanations thereto are reproduced below. Sikh, Mr. Muhammad Ismail Sahib, Madras, Muslim, Sir, I move that the following proviso be added to Article 35, provided that any group, section or community of people shall not be obliged to give up its own personal law in case it has such a law. If anything is done affecting the personal laws, it will be tantamount to interference with the way of life of those people who have been observing these laws for generations and ages. This secular state which we are trying to create should not do anything to interfere with the way of life and religion of the people. The matter of retaining personal law is nothing new. We have precedents in European countries. My honorable friends have forgotten that, apart from the Northwest Frontier Province, up till 1937 in the rest of India, in various parts, such as the United Provinces, the Central Provinces and Bombay, the Muslims to a large extent were governed by the Hindu law in the matter of succession, Dr. Brij Ambedkar. Mr. Nazaruddin Ahmad, Sir, I beg to move that to Article 35, the following proviso be added, namely, provided that the personal law of any community which has been guaranteed by the statute shall not be changed except with the previous approval of the community ascertained in such manner as the Union Legislature might determine by law. As I have already submitted, the goal should be towards a uniform civil code but it should be gradual and with the consent of the people concerned. Mahbub Ali Beg Sahib Bahadur, Sir, I move that the following proviso be added to Article 35. Provided that nothing in this article shall affect the personal law of the citizen. My view of Article 35 is that the words, civil code, do not cover the strictly personal law of a citizen. The civil code covers laws of this kind, laws of property, transfer of property, law of contract, law of evidence etc. The law as observed by a particular religious community is not covered by Article 35. That is my view. Anyhow, in order to clarify the position that Article 35 does not affect the personal law of the citizen, I have given notice of this amendment. Now, sir, if for any reason the framers of this article have got in their minds that the personal law of the citizen is also covered by the expression, civil code, I wish to submit that they are overlooking the very important fact of the personal law being so much dear and near to certain religious communities. As far as the Muslims are concerned, their laws of succession, inheritance, marriage and divorce are completely dependent upon their religion. Sri M. Ananthasananam Iyengar, it is a matter of contract. Mahbub Ali Beg Sahib Bahadur, I know that Mr. Ananthasanam Iyengar has always very queer ideas about the laws of other communities. It is interpreted as contract, while the marriage amongst the Hindus is a sanskara and that among Europeans it is a matter of status. I know that very well, but this contract is enjoined on the Musalmans by the Quran, and if it is not followed, marriage is not a legal marriage at all. For 1350 years this law has been practiced by Muslims and recognized by all authorities in all states. If today Mr. Ananthasanam Iyengar is going to say that some other method of proving the marriage is going to be introduced, we refuse to abide by it because it is not according to our religion. B. Pauker Sahib Bahadur, Madras, Muslim, Mr. Vice President, Sir, I support the motion which has already been moved by Mr. Mohammad Ismail Sahib to the effect that the following proviso be added to Article 35, provide that any group, section or community of people shall not be obliged to give up its own personal law in case it has such a law. The above stated amendments proposed to draft Article 35 were opposed by K. M. Munshi and Alladi Krishna Swami Ayer. Relevant extracts of their responses are reproduced below. Shri K. M. Munshi, Bombay, General, Mr. Vice President, I beg to submit a few considerations. This particular clause which is now before the House is not brought for discussion for the first time. The ground that is now put forward against it is, firstly that it infringes the fundamental right mentioned in Article 19, and secondly, it is tyrannous to the minority. As regards Article 19, the House accepted it and made it quite clear that, nothing in this article shall affect the operation of any existing law or preclude the state from making any law, regulating or restricting, or other secular activity which may be associated with religious practices, b, for social welfare and reforms. Therefore, the House has already accepted the principle that if a religious practice followed so far covers a secular activity or falls within the field of social reform or social welfare, it would be open to Parliament to make laws about it without infringing this fundamental right of a minority. It must also be remembered that if this clause is not put in, it does not mean that the Parliament in future would have no right to enact a civil code. The only restriction touches a right would be Article 19, and I have already pointed out that Article 19, accepted by the House unanimously, permits legislation covering secular activities. The whole object of this article is that as and when the Parliament thinks proper, or rather when the majority in the Parliament thinks proper, an attempt may be made to unify the personal law of the country. A further argument has been advanced that the enactment of a civil code would be tyrannical to minorities. Is it tyrannical? Nowhere in advanced Muslim countries the personal law of each minority has been recognized as so sacrosanct as to prevent the enactment of a civil code. Take for instance Turkey or Egypt. No minority in these countries is permitted to have such rights. But I go further. When the Shariat Act was passed, or when certain laws were passed in the central legislature in the old regime, the Khojas and Kutchi Memons were highly dissatisfied. They then followed certain Hindu customs. For generations since they became converts, they had done so. They did not want to conform to the Shariat, and yet by legislation of the central legislature certain Muslim members who felt that Shariat law should be enforced upon the whole community carried their point. The Khojas and Kutchi Memons most unwillingly had to submit to it. Where were the rights of minority then? When you want to consolidate a community, you have to take into consideration the benefit which may accrue to the whole community and moto the customs of a part of it. It is not therefore correct to say that such an act is tyranny of the majority. If you will look at the countries in Europe which have a civil code, everyone who goes there from any part of the world and every minority has to submit to the civil code. It is not felt to be tyrannical to the minority. The point, however, is this: whether we are going to consolidate and unify our personal law in such a way that the way of life of the whole country may in course of time be unified and secular. We want to divorce religion from personal law, from what may be called social relations, or from the rights of parties as regards inheritance or succession. What have these things got to do with religion? I really fail to understand. After all, we are an advancing society. We are in a stage where we must unify and consolidate the nation by every means without interfering with religious practices. Ellipsis. It is therefore not merely a question for minorities, but it also affects the majority. CPM invites Muslim League to join anti-UCC agitation. CPM State Secretary M.V. Govindam stated that his party is ready to involve all non-communal organizations to join protests against Uniform Civil Code, UCC, and the Manipur issue. But, his party would not invite Congress to the struggle. The Samastha Kerala Jamiyatul Ulema and similar organizations will be involved. Indian Union Muslim League, IUML, is not particularly invited, because political parties are not invited. But, CPM believes that IUML is a democratic party. It is active among the minorities. It is to be remembered, Govindam had stated, in December 2022, that IUML is not communal. CPM appears to be all set to ignore the IUML-led United Agitation. On the other hand, the party tries to keep Samastha and other like-minded groups together. Govindam said, the party state committee reached a conclusion that UCC is meant to implement the Hindutva agenda. IUML state president Sadiq Ali Thangal said that anti-UCC agitation should not be decided by a single party. He was reacting to the CPM state secretary's statement that IUML may cooperate with its, CPM's, agitation. Govindam is not for inviting Congress as it does not have a clear idea about UCC on the national level. Even Rahul Gandhi does not have any stand. Samastha, it would take the initiative for anti-UCC agitation. The Samastha Kerala Jamiyatul Ulema president Jifri Mutukkoya Thangal said that Muslims cannot compromise on UCC. Muslim marriage, divorce and inheritance come under religious rules. Muslims would not agree to change it. He said that his organization agrees with the idea of Sunni unity put forward by All India Sunni Jamiyatul Ulema General Secretary Kanthapuram AP Abubakar Muslia. In other words, Muslim community organizations are joining hands for anti-UCC agitation. And, significantly, CPM is trying to bring all of them under its umbrella. Even though IUML leader Sadiq Ali Thangal has not expressed his pleasure to join hands with CPM, he has stated that his party would be at the forefront of discussing the Sunni unity. T. Satterson. Sri Alladi Krishnaswamy Iyer, Madras, General, Mr. Vice President, after the very full exposition of my friend the Honorable Mr. Munshi, it is not necessary to cover the whole ground. But it is as well to understand whether there can be any real objection to the article as it runs. The state shall endeavor to secure for the citizens a uniform civil code throughout the territory of India. Now, my friend Mr. Pocker leveled an attack against the drafting committee on the ground that they did not know their business. I should like to know whether he has carefully read what happened even in the British regime. You must know that the Muslim law covers the field of contracts, the field of criminal law, the field of divorce law, the field of marriage and every part of law as contained in the Muslim law. When the British occupied this country, they said, we are going to introduce one criminal law in this country which will be applicable to all citizens. Did the Muslims take exception, and did they revolt against the British for introducing a single system of criminal law? Similarly, we have the law of contracts governing transactions between Muslims and Hindus, between Muslims and Muslims. They are governed not by the law of the Quran but by the Anglo-Indian jurisprudence, yet no exception was taken to that. Today, even without Article 35, there is nothing to prevent the future Parliament of India from passing such laws. Therefore, the idea is to have a uniform civil code. Under the Muslim law, unlike under Hindu law, marriage is purely a civil contract. The idea of a sacrament does not enter into the concept of marriage in Muslim jurisprudence, though the incidence of the contract may be governed by what is laid down in the Quran and by their jurists. Therefore, there is no question of religion being in danger. Therefore, there is no force to the objection that is put forward to Article 35. The future legislatures may attempt a uniform civil code or they may not. The uniform civil code will run into every aspect of civil law. Why should you distrust much more a national indigenous government than a foreign government which has been ruling? Why should our Muslim friends have greater confidence, greater faith in the British rule than in a democratic rule which will certainly have regard to the religious tenets and beliefs of all people? Therefore, for those reasons, I submit that the House may unanimously pass this article which has been placed before the members after due consideration. Before the amendments were put to vote, Dr. B.R. Ambedkar made the following observations. The Honorable Dr. B.R. Ambedkar, Sir, I am afraid I cannot accept the amendments which have been moved to this article. In dealing with this matter, I do not propose to touch on the merits of the question as to whether this country should have a civil code or it should not. That is a matter which I think has been dealt with sufficiently for the occasion by my friend, Mr. Munshi, as well as by Sri Alladi Krishna Swami Iyer. My friend, Mr. Hussain Imam, in rising to support the amendments, asked whether it was possible and desirable to have a uniform code of laws for a country so vast as this is. Now I must confess that I was very much surprised at that statement, for the simple reason that we have in this country a uniform code of laws covering almost every aspect of human relationship. Coming to the amendments, there are only two observations which I would like to make. My first observation would be to state that members who put forth these amendments say that the Muslim personal law, so far as this country was concerned, was immutable and uniform through the whole of India. Now I wish to challenge that statement. I think most of my friends who have spoken on this amendment have quite forgotten that up to 1935 the Northwest Frontier Province was not subject to the Shariat law. It followed the Hindu law in the matter of succession and in other matters, so much so that it was in 1939 that the central legislature had to come into the field and to abrogate the application of the Hindu law to the Muslims of the Northwest Frontier Province and to apply the Shariat law to them. That is not all. My honorable friends have forgotten that, apart from the Northwest Frontier Province, up till 1937 in the rest of India, in various parts, such as the United Provinces, the Central Provinces and Bombay, the Muslims to a large extent were governed by the Hindu law in the matter of succession. In order to bring them on the plane of uniformity with regard to the other Muslims who observed the Shariat law, the legislature had to intervene in 1937 and to pass an enactment applying the Shariat law to the rest of India. I am also informed by my friend, Sri Karunakara Menon, that in North Malabar the Maramakathayam law applied to all not only to Hindus but also to Muslims. It is to be remembered that the Maramakathayam law is a matriarchal form of law and not a patriarchal form of law. The Mushalmans, therefore, in North Malabar were up to now following the Maramakathayam law. It is therefore no use making a categorical statement that the Muslim law has been an immutable law which they have been following from ancient times. My second observation is to give them an assurance. I quite realize their feelings in the matter, but I think they have read rather too much into Article 35, which merely proposes that the state shall endeavor to secure a civil code for the citizens of the country. It does not say that after the code is framed the state shall enforce it upon all citizens merely because they are citizens. It is perfectly possible that the future parliament may make a provision by the way of making a beginning that the court shall apply only to those who make a declaration that they are prepared to be bound by it, so that in the initial stage the application of the code may be purely voluntary. Parliament may feel the ground by some such method. This is not a novel method. The UCC once enacted will be a secular and beneficial legislation that will bridge the gap between law and society. Based on the Constituent Assembly debates with reference to draft Article 35, which was incorporated in the Constitution as Article 44, extracted above, and as expressed in Article 25, 2b, so also the debates of Article 44, the intent of the Constituent Assembly was to protect personal laws of different communities by elevating their stature to that of other fundamental rights, however with the rider, that the legislature was competent to amend the same. Article 25, 2b, vested the power with the legislature to interfere with personal law on the ground of social welfare and reform. It is a settled proposition that progressive and beneficial legislation must be interpreted in favor of the beneficiaries when it is possible to take two views of a legal provision. The law should be interpreted in terms of the changing needs of the times. The UCC definitely touches upon the matrix of religion. However, the main objective, reason and intent is clear, to empower all citizens of India. All provisions of the Constitution must be harmoniously construed so that there remains no conflict between them whilst drafting the Uniform Civil Code. It would be pertinent to mention that the constitutional protection to tenets of personal law cannot be interfered with, as long as the same do not infringe public order, morality and health, and other provisions of Part 3 of the Constitution. This is a clear position expressed in Article 25, 1. To conclude, the UCC once enacted will be a secular and beneficial legislation that will bridge the gap between law and society. It must be embraced by all communities. The UCC must be self-speaking, so as not to frustrate the very objective of the statute, just as change in social reality is the law of life, Responsiveness to change in social reality is the life of the law. Topics: Constitution as Article 44 UCC definitely touches Muslims or UCC Muslim law covers Alladi Krishna Swami Ayer Maramakathayam Law M. Ananthasananam Iyengar UCC in India UCC in Constituent Assembly Debates.